Our next presenter is Tara Agrawal Padula. Tara is a doctoral candidate in community nutrition at Cornell University. Tara is interested in understanding how communities manage food in Eden. Her dissertation research considers how work and family demand shape food choices. Prior to Cornell, Tara led efforts to eliminate health inequities in Boston, Massachusetts. She holds a Bachelor of Art in Biology Environmental Studies from UC Santa Cruz and a Master's of Science in Food Policy and Allied Nutrition from Tufts. Tara?
Great, thank you so much. So the title of my presentation today is Lives We Choose to Live, Linking Employed Mothers' Daily Schedules to Daily Routines for Feeding Children. And I just want to acknowledge my co-author and advisor, Carol Devine, who's here in the audience today, and colleagues from my program as well. Hopefully what I can present is some of the context around some of the questions that we've had that you've raised for our other presenters. So I will get started. I have no disclosures to share. And in terms of the background, again, we know that childhood overweight and obesity remains high. Recent research suggests that despite this declining trend, there isn't a pretty high prevalence of childhood overweight and obesity among children. And low-income children in particular are especially vulnerable, especially because their diets do not meet guidelines for health. And research shows that they do have a greater exposure to obesogenic foods, both where they live and on TV, as compared to higher income children. We also know that frequent family meals do have a positive impact for children's diets. However, at the same time, since 1999, there's research to suggest that the frequency of family meals, especially among low-income youth, particularly adolescents, has been declining. So we know that there are these great benefits to family meals. However, it's not quite possible for families to be able to have family meals. And then we also know a separate line of research within the work and family literature has shown that meeting family needs, especially over the last 10 to 20 years, has really become increasingly difficult for families, and in particular low-income families who are facing a precarious workplace and a very difficult labor market. And lastly, a recent report that was just released by the USDA found that SNAP households need to balance multiple priorities, which is not surprising, while at the same time having very similar values to their higher income counterparts. So with these factors in mind, when we think about children's health here in the United States and the context in which their families are living on a daily basis, my research is really trying to bring together these two issues. The research purpose for my study today is to understand how low-income employed mothers of preschool children experience feeding their children. And my research is primarily qualitative. The research project took place in a rural upstate New York County. You can see on the map here with a red dot, that's where our location is. And I purposefully selected a sample of 19 employed or student mothers who had preschoolers in Head Start between the ages of 3 and 4 years of age. And when I say purposively selected, we were looking for moms who had different kinds of household situations. So moms who were married, living with a significant other, living on their own, or living with another adult in the home, because we thought that these kinds of characteristics in the home might really matter for how parents are able to feed their children. Our approach was to use in-depth, semi-structured interviews in English, and all of the interviews were transcribed verbatim and analyzed using the constant comparative method. And this method really looks at, okay, I have my first participant, how is what they're saying similar or different to what participant number two is saying as similar or different to what participant number three is saying? So here are just some brief findings from what from our sample. So again, we had 19 mothers who were working or in school. The average age of mothers in this sample was 31 years. About half of moms in the sample were receiving both WIC and SNAP, and about 4 were not receiving either. In terms of household situations, four of the 19 moms in our sample were living completely on their own, so with their child, but with no other adult in their house. And we had about half of moms living with a spouse or significant other. This person might have been a partner they were not married to, but had been with a long time. And another four moms were living with another adult, but not a spouse or significant other. So this might have been an older sibling or a grandparent. In terms of the money situation, we asked moms their perception of their situation. We didn't ask them for a dollar amount, and again, we had a sample of Head Start moms. So they were generally within the same income bracket, so we really wanted to get a sense of, from their perspective, how did they feel about the money situation in their house. And about half of moms said they felt like they were comfortable and had enough, but about half also said they had to cut back and didn't have enough. In terms of the kinds of jobs that moms were employed in this region of upstate New York, many of them were employed in healthcare, food service and retail sectors, other retail, other kinds of jobs such as construction. That's a big employer in this part of the state. And then three moms were in school either full or part-time. However, these three moms also might have had a part-time job as well. And in terms of working hours or in school hours, a little over half of our sample of moms said they were working full-time. About eight moms said they were working part-time. And we really wanted to understand how much control do moms have over their daily schedule, because we thought that might be important for how they're able to feed their children. And we found that over half of our moms in the sample said they had a varied weekly schedule, whereas seven of our moms said they had the same weekly schedule. So what did we find from our in-depth interviews? We found moms discussing a number of child feeding strategies that they used on a daily basis. Today, I'm just going to select one of the numerous strategies we heard them talk about to share with you. So moms talked about this idea of child feeding routines, these food-related practices that were happening on a daily basis that moms were using to make sure to get their children fed. We also found that these routines were actually sequenced in particular ways across the day in terms of both how moms were preparing food and how moms were scheduling eating episodes for children. And finally, in these in-depth interviews, we really heard from moms that to have these child feeding routines really required synchronizing what was happening for them in their work lives and what was happening in their family lives. So we found three emergent child feeding routines from our sample of 19 moms. And on the right-hand side, I've listed the routine categories, and I provided an illustrative quote to really give you a sense of what moms in these respective categories were thinking about and were saying. So the first routine category that moms described was this everybody eats together idea. So one mom who I think is particularly exemplary of moms in this category says, I make dinner and we always sit down family style. We always sit at the table and the kids serve themselves. So this mom, she lived with her significant other. She worked part-time, weekdays, and weekend overnights. Moms who are in the do our best category discussed, as this mother describes, I let him eat when he wants. Like, I don't just schedule his time like, okay, you can eat now. I used to let him eat whatever he wants, but I don't anymore. And this mom notably lives on her own. She works full-time weekdays and evenings. And finally, moms who talked about having somewhat of an unpredictable routine for feeding their children, this mom discusses, sometimes I'm just too tired to cook during the week. Child's father's not here because he would help me cook a lot. Now that he's not here, I'm like, oh, well, just get milk, have a bowl of cereal for supper. And this mom lives alone and works part-time, weekday, and weekends. So what are the implications of these kinds of routines for child food and eating? So again, on the right-hand side, I've listed the routine categories and then some key characteristics that became emergent throughout the course of analyzing the interviews, and then some of the qualitative impacts that we heard from moms as they were sharing with us their family routines. So for Everybody Eats Together, some of the routine characteristics that moms described were planned eating episodes, meals at very specific times, moms often talked about sitting and eating dinner with their child, and they talked about dinner meals with various components, a fruit, a vegetable, a starch, and strong rules for child eating behavior. In terms of what this meant for children's food and eating, moms described offering meals where there were fruits and vegetables and milk for snacks and meals. Dinner was eaten with most family members, at least, but if not more, than one time a week. Dinner meals in particular were at the table, and the TV was usually off for most meals, especially for dinner. Moms who talked about a routine where they were doing our best talked more about this idea of impromptu eating episodes, meals that fell within a range of times, moms possibly not being able to eat with the child but having someone else in the household eat with them. Quick, easy foods were made for dinner, and there were some rules for child eating behavior. And moms, through the qualitative interviews, were describing foods that were higher in fat, high salt foods, and sugar-sweetened beverages being offered to children for snacks and meals. And dinner was eaten with most family members once or even less so a week. And the TV was on for most snacks and meals. And finally, moms who had this unpredictable routine had a lot of similarities to moms in the do our best category, but they also described actually missing meals, having meal times that varied, so not even really falling within a range of 4:30 to 6:30 or 4 to 5, but this day, depending on what my work schedule is, my meal time is this time, and they had a much more varied mealtime situation. Moms also talked about giving food to others to prepare food for them for their children because they were not there to provide, to feed their child and prepare the meal for them. And these moms also talked about few rules for child eating behavior. And again, the impacts on child food and eating, not dislike moms who were talking about a routine related to do our best. However, moms also talked about the possibility of children being overfed. So if their child was being fed by someone outside of the home, not themselves, she was not at the meal, she often talked about not necessarily knowing whether or not her child may have eaten something. And meals and snacks for children whose moms had more of an unpredictable routine were often eaten with other adults and children at least once a week, if not more. And so we also looked at how these child feeding routines related to work and family characteristics that we had purposefully sampled on. So we found that for moms describing an everybody eats together routine, these moms were most likely to live with their child and with a significant other. These moms were most likely to work full-time and report having the same weekly schedule. For moms who were doing our best, they were reporting living with a significant other. Could be their spouse, it could be a boyfriend, or they were also talking about living with another adult just generally in the household. And these moms worked full or part-time and had either the same or varied weekly schedule. And where we really see an interesting difference is for moms who had an unpredictable routine, these moms were most likely to live alone with their child but not have another adult in the house, most likely to work part-time and or have a varied weekly schedule. The other thing that emerged from our data was this idea that moms' routines weren't fixed. They weren't always doing the same thing every day, every week. But there were things that came up for them that really required them to change what they were doing. So I want to provide just a few quotes and examples of the kinds of disruptions that we heard across all of the interviews, regardless of routine category. So a number of moms discussed being off schedule related to family or work obligations and how that changed how they went about their routine. So this mom says, I didn't really have time to plan what I was going to make. I had to go to the store and pick up prescriptions and stuff for the house. That's why I was sort of like, okay, we got to do something easy, just grab the pizza and the wings. This mom lives alone and works full-time on the weekends. Another mom talked about extracurricular activities as being a disruption to her daily routine. Usually gymnastic nights can be an on-the-go. We have like 15 minutes, and whatever you don't eat in 15 minutes goes with us, and you finish it in the car. Fights also came up as an important disruption for moms. Usually I have a fight. He really doesn't like many meats. He has a really hard time. He will not eat chicken. And having visitors at the meal who might not typically be there. My sister was there, and then she doesn't eat anything unless it's been in a can or a box. and they saw her eating, not eating dinner, so therefore it made them not want to eat, and I don't know, it was kind of irritating. And finally, fatigue from work and family life. When you work the whole day and then you get your kids and then you're just tired, you know the kids are hungry and they're screaming and arguing. You just want to get them fed. That's when we'll go to McDonald's drive-thru. So I think the really salient point here is that we're seeing that these daily disruptions have implications for where children are fed, how children are fed, and what they're being fed. So just to wrap up, child feeding routines, again, differed by work and family characteristics for moms in this sample. And we find that social support, so having another adult in the household, and job schedule control are important for maintaining child feeding routines, and that there's a lot of day-to-day variation in work and family schedules, and this affects how children are fed. And so I'd like to just say that how children are fed is providing us clues about what they eat. And daily disruptions require feeding routines to be modified. And finally, just a few implications of this work. Feeding children is not just about food. It's also about work and family routines. Day-to-day variation in how they're fed is affecting what they're eating. And interventions should accommodate different work and family contexts and help parents potentially plan for disruptions. Thank you.
Does anyone have a question for?
Hi. Thank you for that question. So I didn't mention how we designed the in-depth interviews, but they were designed using a 24-hour qualitative recall method. So what I did was I asked moms to describe for me everything that they fed their child the day before and what that experience was like, if it was typical for them. And some moms described, yes, this was typical, or no, it was out of the ordinary, and here's why. So it took us about, I would say, an hour to do the entire interview. So I did both a 24-hour qualitative interview to get at the food-related piece, but I also asked about moms' satisfaction with their work and family roles, what their jobs were like, so I could really get a little bit more of the context for moms. I'll have to go back and look at the data. I mean, I think it was more we were deducing based on what they were, we were linking what we were seeing qualitatively, rather than them making a comment on how they, their sort of efficacy or how they felt about what they were doing. Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi.
I'm curious about
Yeah. Yeah, so that was actually a direct quote from a mom, which I thought was really interesting, and I think that her sort of putting that out there as if it is a choice for her to make. She was a full-time working mom. She had a very strong routine. She lived with her husband. She had three kids, and she sort of, this came out in the interview, you know, she was talking about being busy and hectic and trying to make food and feeding happen for her kids. She said, you know, this is just the lives we choose to live. I think that's a good point. I also think that it's how much time moms feel like they have, but also their experience with the time, so how tired they feel from whatever their work situation is, how exhausted their children might be from being off at a day in school or being with multiple caregivers. So I think there are, I think time plays a pretty central role, and I think discretionary time is certainly a part of it, and there's these other facets, too, about mom's experience of that time. So yes, they may have more or less time, but how a mom might move through and feel that time throughout the day, I think, matters too. Thank you. Yeah, when I was recruiting, I came across a few single fathers, but the recruitment criteria was purposefully directed towards moms because we know that women are primarily the food caregivers and food preparers for the household. So we did have to limit our recruitment in that way. But you raise a really interesting point that I am not presenting here today, but that we're going to do some follow-up work on and analysis on, is this idea of delegates. So moms who had a significant other in the home, and this individual is primarily a male spouse or male significant other or boyfriend partner, she would rely on that person. And we are finding that whether or not the delegate is in the household may matter for the routines moms can and do have. They also talk about grandparents as having a pretty big role as well. And in this area, because there's been so much of a change in the economy and a pretty heavy impact of the recession, many grandparents are still continuing to work while the moms and their significant others might be underemployed, and so moms are really relying a lot on working grandparents. So I think that's going to be an interesting thread that we follow as well. Yeah, so one thing that we're finding that really works for moms is texting them. We're doing a lot of text communication for recruitment and scheduling of the interviews. So we're thinking something along those lines. There's been a recent article in the New York Times that I've been in conversation about with my advisor of a project in San Francisco, and they did a texting intervention more related to literacy and verbal language development among low-income, I think, kindergartners. So we're thinking maybe some sort of approach like that. I think someone had mentioned goal setting, thinking about what does Head Start do. They do have a mandate for parent engagement and communicating with parents around food and nutrition. So are there ways that classroom teachers or the health and nutrition staff can work with moms to help them plan for disruptions? We know this is going to come up if you do have a busy night because we know you're working. What could be some strategies you might want to put in place? And then the delegate piece, how can we think about working with moms' delegates to provide them with messaging and some strategies that we're conveying that moms should use, but they're not always the primary food provider or food preparer for children. So how do we work with other caregivers, I think, would be another strategy.
Okay, I'm going to take one more question, and the panel will be available for questions for those who don't have to leave. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for that idea. I think that's a wonderful idea to reflect back to the moms. Here's what we've heard from you as they're providing materials to other moms who are bringing their children into the program. So thank you. In terms of the piece related to sitting and talking with moms, the in-depth interview process is very powerful because it changes the power relationship, I think, in some ways between the researcher and the participant, where the approach really is, I want to hear your story, and it's very open-ended. Share with me in the way that you best feel comfortable, your experience. So I did have moms, as we were going through, you know, everything they do in their day and how they manage work and family, sit back and say, wow, I don't have the time in my daily life to actually talk about this and reflect on it. You're really making me think about how I might be able to do things better, or you're making me think about all of the things that I do pretty well already. So we got a lot of, I think, positive feedback from moms generally in terms of the research approach. And I will say I only presented cross-sectional information today, but we have followed the moms in time across the Head Start school year. So we had a few touch points in the research relationship with them. So I'm excited to look at how things changed for moms from when we first spoke with them at the beginning of the school year to closer towards the end of the school year.